It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Wisconsin students are heading back to class, and school districts around the state are adjusting to developments on the state and federal level.
Last month, Governor Evers signed Wisconsin's new two-year budget, which allocates $1.4 billion to K-12 education. It includes a boost to the rate at which the state reimburses school districts for special education costs.
At the federal level, the U.S. Department of Education rescinded guidance last week that helps districts serve English language learners. And earlier this summer, federal officials announced that funding for certain grant programs for K-12 schools wouldn't arrive on time.
To hear how districts are navigating these changes, we have Bob Green, who serves on the Middleton Cross Plains Area School District Board of Education and is second vice president of the Wisconsin Association of School Boards. Bob, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Well, thank you very much, Kate. I appreciate you having me on.
And Dan Rossmiller is here, executive director of the Wisconsin Association of School Boards. It's a nonprofit advocacy group with over 400 member school districts. Dan, welcome.
Thank you, Kate. Good to be with you.
Dan, starting with you and starting at the state level, Governor Evers signing a new state budget that keeps general K-12 funding flat. Is it enough to meet the needs of districts for this upcoming school year?
Well, it's a bit of a challenging situation. I know the Madison School Superintendent said if he were grading the budget, he would have given it an incomplete. For many years, the state has not allowed school districts through the revenue limits, which are state controlled or state enacted controls on school district spending. The state has not allowed sufficient resources for schools to keep pace with inflation, and that's created challenges. It's led to school districts having to go to referendum to maintain programs and services to students. So it's going to be another challenging year. That $1.4 billion figure you cited is perhaps a little bit misleading, because that's not money necessarily being provided by the state. I believe something like about half of that is money that's actually coming from the state. The rest of that's all going to come from property taxes. The legislature did not fund the revenue limit increase that it left in place of $325 per pupil. So that means that if boards of education utilize that $325 per pupil increase, all of that money is going to come from property taxes. The state will not be sharing in that effort.
Bob, Dan brings up referendums. Wisconsin voters approved a record number of referendums last year to increase property taxes to fund their local schools. Will districts continue to rely on referendums to fund day-to-day operations in some cases?
If you take a look at the inflation rate versus the money that the school districts need just to keep the doors open, there's quite a gap. And the only way to fund that gap is to do it through a referendum. Obviously, parents want to have good schools. So if you want to continue to have good schools, pay teachers, keep the doors open, and just stay up with inflation, the only other way we have for getting funding is through referendum. We have another referendum coming up next year. We did ours on a four-year cycle in this particular case. We didn't do it on a permanent one.
And how do residents receive these referendums?
Well, nobody likes paying more taxes. And Dan had mentioned that, you know, part of that increase that the state gave us, the ability to spend more, has to come from the property taxes, which is no different than if we were to run a referendum. We would have to ask that money would come from that. So in a certain sense, it's the same idea as running a referendum. But yes, school districts have to do that because we have to have a balanced budget. You could take a little bit from your fund balance, but sooner or later you run out of money. And that's certainly not a good thing.
Dan, turning to you, earlier this summer, state lawmakers passed a plan to cut mental health funding for schools by $10 million over the next 2 years. How could cuts affect, the state of mental health services moving forward?
Well, it's always challenging for schools to provide mental health services. We don't have the trained professionals. that can provide the direct mental health services. But we can certainly identify issues that students are having and try to help them get assistance. One of the challenges is that we have a statewide shortage of mental health providers who specialize in adolescent and youth mental health. And so there are long waiting lists. You know, that mental health is a challenge, not only for students' well-being, but it's a challenge for student learning. And we want students to learn at the highest level possible. And mental health certainly interferes with that. I think one of the bright spots, if you will, is that many school districts are adopting policies to limit cell phone use and social media access during the periods of instruction or during the school day, which is a first step in cutting down on some of the causes, or at least things that are highly correlated with mental health stresses on adolescents.
That's Dan Rossmiller, the head of the Wisconsin Association of School Boards. We have Bob Green with us, a Middleton Cross Plains School Board member, as we talk about state, and we'll get to federal changes in K-12 education at the start of this new academic year. So, Bob, cell phone policies, they vary from one district to another. Most districts have some restriction on cell phone usage. How are districts addressing this kind of tug of war for students' attention with their device distractions?
That's been an ongoing problem this year, or I should say last year. Cell phones in Middleton are not allowed at all at the middle school level. And at the high school level, the students are not allowed to have to use their cell phones during class time. They are allowed to use them during passing time as well as free time. So just to eliminate that distraction. And we put that policy in place, and surprisingly, I've not received one complaint concerning that policy.
Dan, do you see these policies, different across districts? There are hundreds of districts. Do you see different policies?
They vary somewhat from district to district. I think the biggest challenge in adopting policies on cell phone usage is, frankly, parents. Many parents want to have essentially immediate access to their children, particularly if there is an emergency or, God forbid, an incident where there's reported or actual school shooting situation. That fear is very present among a number of parents, and so negotiating that in a way that parents feel comfortable has been a challenge. But in general, in younger grades, cell phones are more restricted up to and through middle school. And then in the high school, there is a little bit more flexibility generally, at least during non-instructional times. There are some districts that have bell-to-bell limitations on cell phone usage. They require cells to be put in a cell phone hotel or into a device so they're not accessible to students. It'll be interesting to see how those, I consider them to be experiments, and we'll see which models work the best. But I'm encouraged that the vast majority of Wisconsin school districts are taking steps to limit cell phone access, particularly during class time, because that is a distraction that causes a lot of frustration among teachers, increases disciplinary referrals and problems with discipline in the classroom, and creates a lot of anxiety among students. They're spending way more time looking at their phones than paying attention to the instruction.
Well, it certainly, too, would probably be good for parents and guardians to get up to speed on what the policies of their school is for their students. I want to turn our attention now to the federal government. We saw, Bob, the Federal Education Department withheld about $72 million from the State Department of Instruction for various programs earlier this summer. That funding has since been released. What are school boards doing across the state to account for funding uncertainty as they plan out future budgets?
We've been identifying this as a major issue for ourselves. We made a conscious decision to put a little extra money in our fund balance with due to the uncertainty whether this money was coming forward. Some of our positions, our contracts start on July 1st, and some of that funding was for staff. And once you sign a one-year contract, they're there, whether we have the funding or not. So it does make it difficult for school districts to ensure that they have the proper funding in place for staff that's already been hired for a year. Once that contract's signed, we have them for a year. We just can't let them go. So that does create a lot of uncertainty. And as we're planning budgets, money available to staff for increased compensation, et cetera, et cetera. You understand what I'm saying?
Dan, did the funding pause affect other school districts?
Yes, it created a great deal of uncertainty, particularly with regard to before and after school programming and other kinds of programming. Traditionally, that funding is released on July 1st. And I think the thing that was causing the biggest concern was that there was almost no notice that the funding would be withheld for a time. The amount of time it would be withheld was uncertain. And the state DPI, our state education agency, received a three-sentence email indicating that that money would be held up. It's since been released, although there are some strings attached to it, some conditions that must be met in order for it to be lawfully spent, at least under presidential executive orders. So that that's something that school districts are going to have to watch. Bob and I are going to Washington in a couple of weeks to talk to our congressional delegation. And although the cuts that have been made so far primarily affect research projects and a few programs related to food service and farm-to-table type things, we're concerned about the nature of our state-federal partnership going forward in education. And we're going to be talking to our congressional folks about that.
Well, Dan and Bob, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kate, for having us.
Bob Green serves on the Middleton Cross Plains Area School District Board, is second vice president for the Wisconsin Association of School Boards. Dan Rossmiller is executive director of this association, as we've been talking about how state and federal changes to K-12 schools are affecting districts across the state.